Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It is Friday, the 8th of April. Good morning and welcome to Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeka Kumet, in Bonn, Germany. Coming up in our program today, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta talks to DW about his country's future with the ICC.
We want reform, but we are also equally prepared to say that we shall leave if we don't get the necessary reforms that we require. But we are seeing it as a court that is not actually fulfilling the mandate that it was supposed to fulfill when the statute itself was first conceived.
The Darfur conflict. Africa Link speaks to UNAMID, the UN Africa Union peacekeeping mission there, about what's going on.
Both sides of the conflict have traditionally not allowed us to go into the East Jabal Marra area. So when people flew, they flew to nearby areas where we have some of our bases.
All that plus more coming up shortly. Stay tuned.
Top story.
On his second day to Germany, the Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta met with German business leaders in Berlin. He spoke at the business forum Kenya hosted by the German Chamber of Industry and Commerce. And later, he met up with the Kenyan diaspora for further discussions. His visit to Berlin came as the International Criminal Court dropped charges of crimes against humanity against his deputy, William Ruto. DW's Daniel Pels had a chance to talk with President Kenyatta. He started by asking him if he had spoken to Chancellor Angela Merkel about reforms in the ICC.
No, we didn't discuss that particular issue.
Is it not an important issue to get the support of other countries such as Germany and France if you want to reform the ICC?
Well, like I said, this wasn't necessarily the forum to do that, and we are pushing and articulating our case very strongly through the state parties and also through the Security Council of the United Nations, which are the appropriate bodies for us to push that argument. And as I'm sure you're aware, we have articulated our case very clearly and our position with regard to the ICC and the need for its reform very clearly, and we shall continue to do so.
Do you want a reform of the ICC? Is there still a possibility? Or like the foreign minister of Rwanda has said to Deutsche Welle, it's better for African countries to leave?
We want reform, but we are also equally prepared to say that we shall leave if we don't get the necessary reforms that we require. But we are seeing it as a court that is not actually fulfilling the mandate that it was supposed to fulfill when the statute itself was first conceived.
Investment, getting more German investors, is another key component of it.
That's a very important component. That's the most important component of our trip, because we believe that we have very strong partnership with Germany. We already have a large number of German companies already invested in Kenya and doing very good business in Kenya, and we want to see that increase, and that was part of the reason why we are here.
Then what can you tell German investors who might be interested to invest in Kenya but who are scared because of the high corruption rate?
This is an issue that we are taking head on, we are tackling. As I'm sure you've seen, a number of senior ministers and public servants have already been arrested. We are strengthening our laws, working again also with private sector, creating a new bribery bill that we have worked in conjunction with private sector that criminalizes a bribery from both the point of the giver as well as the taker, and strengthening the institutions that we have to fight corruption. Currently today, for the first time since we've put all this together, we have a large number of cases already before courts awaiting determination on corruption. So Kenya is seriously addressing this issue, and I believe we are making very good progress in that particular fight.
And lastly, on regional peace and stability, of course, the threat by Islamist militias, Al-Shabaab in Somalia, was also high on the agenda of the talks, I assume. What additional support would you wish from Germany or from Europe to fight Al-Shabaab?
We need far greater cooperation from a point of view of intelligence sharing, from a point of view of dealing with de-radicalization, from a point of view of dealing with the causes of extremism. And this cannot be done by any one single country alone. And I think there is growing agreement that we need to strongly partner going forward.
Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta speaking to DW's Daniel Pels in Berlin, and we would like to apologize for the unpleasant audio quality.
get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
In the Sudan's Darfur region, fighting has intensified since January. The security situation has equally worsened, leading to large-scale displacement of people. According to the United Nations, 138,000 people have been forced to flee their homes, and a political solution is not in sight. There has been fighting between government forces and rebels loyal to the Sudan Liberation Army in the Jebel Mara region. Darfur has been in turmoil since 2003, with ethnic African rebels accusing the Arab-dominated Sudanese government of discrimination. Eunice Wanjiru spoke to Ashraf, spokesman of the UN Africa Union peacekeeping force UNAMID in Sudan, and started by asking him about what led to the recent flare-up in violence.
It started with exchange of hostilities between the government forces and a faction of the Sudan Liberation Movement under the leadership of Abdul Wahid al-Nur. This was started around the 15th of January, but then the hostilities have been ongoing since then up to recently.
What is the UNAMID doing to protect civilians?
To start with, when the fighting started, large numbers of civilians, mainly women and children, started running away from the area where the conflict is. And this is one of the areas where we don't have access. Both sides of the conflicts have traditionally not allowed us to go into the East Jebel Marra area. So when people flew, they flew to nearby areas where we have some of our bases, the area of Sortoni, Tawila, and Nertiti. So the IDPs, or civilians running from the conflict, came over to the vicinity of our team site and gathered in search of protection. Of course, as soon as that happened, the mission stepped up its activity, its peacekeeping and protection activity in these areas by increasing the number of patrols, by providing a safe area for the gathered IDPs and securing this area to protect them from any harm. And also, at the same time, the mission started providing initial humanitarian assistance until the UN country team, the UN agencies charged with humanitarian assistance arrived, and they also enjoy the protection of UNAMID peacekeepers, UNAMID forces, because one of the tasks that we have in Darfur is to protect the humanitarian workers and the agencies while delivering humanitarian aid and support to displaced people and the wider population of Darfur, of course.
And how far are we in finding a solution for the crisis in Darfur?
Well, this is one of the things that the head of mission, the Joint Special Representative for UNAMID, has been very active with. And in his recent press conference, he reiterated his call for the holdout movements, or those movements who have not joined the peace attempts, whether through the Doha Documents for Peace or the efforts of the African Union High Implementation Panel. He called on them to actually come to the negotiation table. The fact of the matter is the armed conflict in Darfur is getting into 13th year, and it's obvious that there is no military solution for the conflict in Darfur. It's actually when people come and sit to the negotiation table and reach a political solution.
Eunice Wanjiru speaking to Ashraf, UNAMID spokesperson. Now, Tanzania's President John Pombe Magufuli joined Rwandans in commemorating the country's 1994 genocide that saw more than 800,000 people killed. This was his first visit outside Tanzania since he was elected head of state last year. Magufuli's trip to Rwanda is seen as significant in enhancing relations between the two East African countries. Relations between Tanzania and Rwanda soured in May 2013 after former Tanzanian President Jakaya Kikwete suggested that the Rwandan government should hold peace talks with the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, FDLR rebel group, to end violence in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. But how important is Magufuli's visit to neighboring Rwanda? My colleague Fred Muvunyi put this question to Generali Ulimengu, who is a senior journalist and political commentator based in Tanzania.
The choice of a neighboring country was bound to be significant, and I think his choice of Rwanda is important in the sense that he wanted to solve a few problems that existed prior to his coming to the presidency. So it is extremely important, I think, that he chose Rwanda, with which Tanzania did not have very good relations over the past couple of years. And I think he and his counterpart in Kigali, Paul Kagame, have laid a very firm foundation for future cooperation. So I think it's significant.
And 3 years ago, bilateral relations between Rwanda and Tanzania hit a snag after President Magufuli's predecessor, Jakaya Kikwete, suggested that the Rwandan government should hold peace talks with the FDLR rebel group, largely composed of genocide perpetrators. Do you think it's time now for the two countries to cross that dark chapter and move on?
I think we have now an opportunity to close that chapter and move on a more logical kind of engagement between Tanzania and Rwanda. It was unfortunate that President Kikwete had made that statement, probably not knowing exactly how hurt the Rwandans would be by that kind of suggestion, and that suggestion being made in a public space. He was not even talking to Paul Kagame in private.
In concrete terms, how can the two leaders, I mean Magufuli and President Kagame, closely work together for the benefit of their citizens?
I think both the leaders have shown a common trait. There is the issue of corruption, which really eats away at the very fabric of society. Because if you have officials who are more interested in getting personal wealth rather than delivering things to the people, and therefore they charge rents on everything that they do, and that affects the people's welfare because delivery is not achieved, you have a problem. And Kagame has been able to deal with that to a great extent. I don't say Rwanda is completely corruption-free, but it's relatively the best example of anti-corruption efforts that have been undertaken in the region. And Magufuli has started on that same thing. He has made all the right noises about corruption, inefficiency, lack of accountability, opacity, and so on and so forth. And he has taken concrete steps. And I think he has sent a message throughout the country and in the region that he's not going to tolerate corruption and lack of accountability, which is the same thing that Kagame has been doing. And I think the two can march in lockstep in that kind of struggle.
Fred Muvunyi speaking to Generali Ulimwengu, a senior journalist and political commentator in Tanzania.
Human rights.
Labor rights activists in Ghana are angry at the way in which Ghanaian workers are being treated by foreign employers operating in the country. They are demanding changes to the law in order to deter employers from violating workers' rights. The move follows reports of an Italian supervisor's particularly humiliating treatment of a Ghanaian because he didn't complete his assigned task on time. DW's Isaac Kalechi reports.
Ibrahim Sanu, a Ghanaian worker in a free zone enclave in western Ghana, explains how he was maltreated by his employers.
Since I went to help my colleague, Mr. Mario came in the yard, then showed me help my colleague, then called me. So, Kim, come take the chain, come. I said, okay. I went to put the chain. The time I brought the chain, he put the chain on my neck. Then, the time he was putting the chain on, I told him that to stop it. He didn't listen to me. He get padlocked, then dragged me to the container. Then he locked me in there. So, I stand there more or less, 15 minutes before they send on our colleague to come remove the chain on me.
Being chained to a container in the hot sun was the employer's idea of a punishment. But why was Sanu punished? Because he had not completed a task assigned to him on time. He was helping a colleague. Sanu is traumatized and wants to quit his current job. The supervisor who imposed this degrading punishment on Sanu was an Italian called Manilo Maggiorotto. He worked for the Ghanaian company Gateway Logistics and has since returned to his home country. Human rights activists and labor unions have condemned his treatment of Sano. They consider it an affront to the fundamental human rights of local workers. Such abuses are also still continuing. The General Transport, Petroleum and Chemical Workers Union is calling for the intervention of national security so Manilo can be apprehended and brought to justice. Richard Hansen is an industrial relations officer of the union.
We are calling for national security to call the director and tell him with a specific timelines that we need to have this Italian back to our country for him to come and face the laws. We are asking the director himself to come and apologize to the whole Ghanaians.
The director Hansen is referring to is the Ghanaian manager of the company which brought the Italian supervisor to Ghana in the first place. One of the problems facing the Ghanaian labor market is the absence of reliable unemployment figures. Nonetheless, Ghanaians can still be heard complaining about the lack of jobs. That means that many have to put up with poorer and poorer working conditions just to remain in employment. In private firms, there is often no labor union available which could represent them. According to a survey undertaken by the Industrial and Commercial Workers Union in Ghana, almost all foreign employers always abuse their Ghanaian employees. The survey disclosed that the Chinese, Lebanese, and Indian employers are the worst abusers. Solomon Kote is the general secretary of the ICU.
About 54% of precarious workers have no written contracts with their employers. Most of them are not even given letters of employment.
That report was compiled by Isaac Kaleche in Ghana. Now, Malawian President Peter Mutharika announced a cabinet reshuffle on Thursday. The last time he made major alterations in his cabinet was in August 2015. Among the reshuffled was the Agriculture Minister Alan Chiembekeza. He has been replaced by former Foreign Affairs Minister George Chaponda. Malawi is one of the countries threatened with hunger and power shortages. DW's George Mango has been telling me how Malawians have been reacting to the changes.
There are quite mixed reactions with regards to this new cabinet reshuffle by President Peter Mutharika. The president was supposed to have reshuffled the cabinet long time ago, looking into the fact that Malawians have been suffering, looking at the aspect of hunger in the country, yet maintaining the Minister of Agriculture, Irrigation and Water Development, Dr. Alan Chiembekeza. To some Malawians, it was not a good idea. Others are saying that this is a political move aimed at silencing some other, you know, technocrats and some other critics who have been very critical of some of his ministers. So there are quite mixed reactions from the public in terms of how the president has reshuffled his cabinet or even firing some of his cabinet ministers.
Apart from what you've just told me, what else could have prompted the president to take this action? Could there have been any external influence?
Right, they have been there. As I've already pointed out, the aspect of hunger. You know, there were a number of times that Malawians, civil society organizations have been pressing on the presidency to call for a state of the national disaster. The donors were supposed to assist Malawi with financial resources so that they are able to procure maize to feed the nation. At the same time, quite a number of ministers were just very quiet. Even the president was quiet. And when there was this opening of the midterm budget review in February, there wasn't much talk about Malawi procuring maize. So the president felt betrayed by the inner circle. And by coming out straight at this time to fire the Minister of Agriculture, that signals the fact that to some extent the president was listening to the critics, the civil society organizations, and then public who have been vehemently calling on the presidency to call for the state of the national food disaster.
So who are the losers and who are the winners in this whole reshuffle?
The losers, first, it's the Minister of Agriculture, Irrigation and Water Development, Dr. Alan Ichiembekeza. Dr. Alan Ichiembekeza used to hold also the position of Secretary General of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, DPP. That's prior to his appointment and then prior to his election into the National Assembly. So he is a loser, and the other loser is Jabi Muhango, because the Minister of Information is supposed to be or is the spokesperson of the government. So by him being shifted to the Minister of Home Affairs, there seems to be a tough job for him. But the winner also is George Chaponda. George Chaponda was a Minister of Foreign Affairs, and now he is like the Minister of Agriculture, Irrigation and Water Development. And this portfolio is the third in command in terms of government hierarchy. So it's like a promotion for him.
George Mwanga in Blantyre.
Your say.
It's that time of the week again when we turn the microphone to you, our listener. Here is Crispin Mwakideo and Mark Caldwell with your say.
We start with the ICC's suspension of charges of crimes against humanity against Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto and radio journalist Joshua Arap Sang. The ICC dropped the case on Tuesday, citing lack of sufficient evidence to convict the two. In Kenya, this outcome solicited mixed reactions. But what have our listeners been saying?
Well, Mark, our regular contributor, Usman bin Afan Damaturu from northeastern Nigeria, commented as follows. I feel very surprised to hear about the suspending of William Ruto's charges by the ICC. I just ask myself, is the ICC too corrupt, like most African courts? I do not see a convenient reason as to why the ICC took that decision. In Hausa, we have a proverb that says, if you are honest, nothing can harm you.
Thanks, Crispin. And you yourself wrote an opinion piece on the ICC ruling for our website dw.com/Africa. Now, Crispin thinks that the Ruto verdict is a slap in the face of the ICC, and it only serves to strengthen its critics. Crispin says, and I quote, even before the judges at the ICC dropped the charges, most Kenyans had lost interest in the case. Apart from Ruto's and Sang's Kalenjin community, ordinary citizens were obviously not spending sleepless nights wondering what would happen if Ruto was found guilty. And he concludes that Ruto is free, but victims of the 2007 violence are still waiting for justice. That's a nice opinion piece from you, Crispin.
Thank you very much for mentioning me, Mark. Well, just as the ICC dropped the case, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta arrived on a state visit here in Germany. And in his meeting with the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, the two discussed the ongoing fight against terrorism. These two got some responses. For instance, Ron Bufford wrote on our Facebook page saying, and I quote, the Islamic terrorism will stop after Germany boots Angela Merkel out of office and tears down the mosques and sends the Islamic radicals and terrorists home. Theo Weil also wrote that Merkel brought terrorism in Europe with her idiotic immigration policy. Not the best person to take advice from. And that does it for this week's Your Say.
Thank you, Crispin and Mark Caldwell, for your say. Now, before we end, here is a reminder of our top stories. In an interview with Deutsche Welle, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta has reiterated that his country will leave the ICC if it doesn't get reforms it requires. And more than 100,000 people have been displaced in Darfur by renewed fighting. And Tanzania's President John Pombe Magufuli has been visiting Rwanda with the aim of mending diplomatic relations. We've come to the end of our program today. Thank you for listening. Africa Link returns next week sometime, and my colleague Crispin Mwakidewo will be here. Do join him if you can. From me, Jane Ayeko Kumet, our lovely technicians, and the rest of Africa Link team, have a nice day.